Greetings and welcome to the IOMSN Town Hall Discussions. How can rehabilitation help in MS? At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A brief question and answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Ms. Jennifer Smirka. Thank you, Ms. Smirka. You may begin.
Thank you, Manny. Good evening, everyone. On behalf of the IOMSN and as co-chair for this program, I'd like to welcome you to this month's town hall discussion entitled How Can Rehabilitation Help in MS, presented by Dr. Megan Barrett. As a reminder, these educational sessions will be held by telephone on the third Tuesday of each month. Each town hall discussion will be led by an IOMSN member speaking on a selected topic for approximately 15 minutes, which will then be followed by an open discussion limited to 1 hour. These discussions are recorded and are available as podcasts on the IOMSN website at www.iomsn.org. We would like to acknowledge and show our appreciation to Biogen IADECT for supporting this project through an unrestricted educational grant. And this evening, I'd like to introduce you to Dr. Megan Barrett. Megan Barrett is an advanced registered nurse practitioner who has been practicing neurology for 10 years and has been an MS certified nurse for 7. She currently works at Baptist Neurology, Beaches Division, where she specializes in the care of MS patients. She received her Doctorate of Nursing Practice degree from the University of Florida in 2009, and her research focus was preventive health care in MS patients. She was elected recently to a 3-year term for the International Organization of MS Nurses, the Board of Directors, and serves on the Clinical Advisory Committee as a research advocate for the North Florida chapter of the National MS Society. She's an active speaker in the region, both with patients and healthcare providers, on topics related to the care of people living with MS. Please join me in welcoming my friend Megan for this evening's meeting. Megan, I'm turning the meeting over to you.
All right. Thanks, Jen, and thanks, everybody, for calling in this evening. I think we have a fun talk and something that you will be able to take some clinical pearls away from. In brief, you do have the slides available on the IOMSN website. We're going to just gloss over real fast some basic facts about MS and define causes of mobility disturbance in MS. But more importantly, really focus on the effects of mobility disturbance, how we can be really helpful participants in the rehabilitation of patients and what I call prehabilitation of people living with MS, which would focus on preventive movement regimens to keep people with MS moving. And finally, I'll discuss a couple of interesting abstracts that were presented at the CMSC this year that have focused on exercise and its effect on multiple sclerosis, both symptomatology and also brain pathology. So briefly, we know that MS affects more than 2.5 million people worldwide, and many more than 400,000 people in the United States. And it's the most common cause of disability in young and middle-aged people in the developed world. The significance of this in rehabilitation being that this is a time of life when people are actually hopefully trying to be healthy. They're trying to maintain weight, maintain a level of physical activity, and here they are struck by a disease that could potentially prevent them from moving or make it more difficult. Briefly, again, relapsing remitting MS is what the most common form is, initially 80 to 85%, and about 50% of people become secondary progressive after 10 years. Primary progressive is less common, but certainly usually more debilitating as is progressive relapsing. I wanted to put in the EDSS slide here briefly because I will refer to it. Most clinical trials these days enroll people with an EDSS of 5.5 to 6 or less. So these are people do have minimal disability, may require some assistance to work and to participate in their activities of daily living. But I think what's interesting is if we look at a large population-based study, in particular the Olmsted County database, which is from Minnesota, these people have been followed for many years, and they looked at disability change over a decade from 91 to 2001, found that even 20 years after onset, only 25% of people with relapsing remitting MS had an EDSS greater than 3. The median time from MS diagnosis to an EDSS score of 6 was 10 years in secondary progressive, 3 years in primary progressive. And in the entire cohort, the median time to an EDSS score of 3 was 17 years. So we do keep people moving, and I think that even if we look at a cohort of patients that were diagnosed between, say, 2001 and 2011, we would see even better statistics because of the really the advent of deciding to treat people early, particularly at clinically isolated syndrome. So causes of mobility disturbance can be primary related to the specific location of a lesion, be it in the brain, the spinal cord, or even we can consider the optic nerve as well, affecting motor, sensory, vestibular, or proprioceptive pathways. Can be secondary, related to injury from a fall, perhaps medication side effects, making people sleepy or groggy and therefore clumsy, or related to fatigue, pain, or continence, or tertiary, related to depression and anhedonia, lack of resources, or deconditioning, which becomes a domino effect. The effects of mobility disturbance are very far and wide. If you don't move well, or you choose not to move, you decondition. People with MS may begin to have an unsteady gait. They have poor exercise tolerance from muscle fatigue. And it's definitely no longer appropriate to recommend a sedentary lifestyle as treatment for MS-related fatigue. Now, of course, this has to be the exercise program has to be individualized to the patient's degree of mobility. But again, increased fall risk, decreased self-confidence because of change in activity level, which can lead to isolation, depression, anxiety, and finally an increased risk for secondary conditions related to a sedentary lifestyle. So guess what? Again, just bigger domino, bigger ball of string, increasing physical comorbidities equals a decreased health-related quality of life. Secondary conditions, particularly of concern to people that have a sedentary lifestyle, are obesity, osteoporosis, hypertension, diabetes, dyslipidemia, and infections from pressure ulcers or from pneumonias. And we know from the NARCOMS database that vascular comorbidity and multiple sclerosis is associated with a more rapid disability progression. So we as MS nurses really have a responsibility to be active in preventive care, preventive physical care, and really instilling the importance of mobility as well as just rehabilitating patients, say, after a relapse. Exercise is beneficial in multiple sclerosis. A randomized controlled trial of yoga and exercise improved measures of fatigue in people with multiple sclerosis. Chronic exercise can improve strength and aerobic fitness level, but this exercise, again, needs to be individualized, and people need to have realistic expectations. So improving aerobic fitness level for a person who is wheelchair-bound is a lot different from a person who is very mobile and not heat-sensitive as a result of their MS. Exercise in general is associated with better cardiovascular fitness, improved strength, better bowel and bladder control, less fatigue and depression, and an increased participation in social activities. If you think about it, people are more confident. So rehabilitation is an active process of change by which a person who has become disabled acquires and uses knowledge and skills necessary for optimal physical, psychological, and social functioning. And that's a definition that was written by the Royal College of Physicians. I think the key words here are achieve, maintain, active, continuous, and optimize. So these are things that actually are happening along a continuum. And rehabilitation can either be restorative, say after a relapse, or preventive, meaning what I refer to as prehabilitation, or let's just keep these people moving and perhaps even improve their movement. Rehabilitation that is restorative usually occurs after a problem is identified. So after a relapse or after a progressive phase of the disease where the patient, you know, sort of has finally reached that threshold of I'm definitely weaker than I was 6 months ago. And it's been an insidious thing, not a sudden thing. It's usually provided by rehab professionals. And once the course of rehabilitation is finished in the acute setting, it should always be continued at home as a maintenance program. So if you don't use it, you lose it. If a person can participate actively, great. If not, then a care partner can help. And the purpose of this is to reestablish function, adapt, and compensate, because in a relapse or in a progressive phase of a disease, something indeed may be lost. So we don't just think of, in this case, physical therapy. We think of occupational therapy as well, as a person living with MS may require new tools to perform their activities of daily living, or may have a decreased stamina that needs to be adapted to. But rehabilitation requires a multidisciplinary approach. It requires all of us. It requires the neurologist, the MS nurse, the rehab professionals, a care partner or a friend that's a cheerleader, perhaps a personal trainer or an exercise specialist, depending on the person. Rehabilitation that is restorative and that is preventative should always be initially supervised. Patients with MS have definitely verbalized a fear of exercising safely, and there may be knowledge deficiency related to what the new normal is for that person. There may be new personal and environmental barriers that need to be addressed, and there may be the need for assistive devices to enhance independence and movement. These may be activity-dependent. For example, a person may be completely resistant to the use of a cane, but then once they realize that using a cane through a large, what I call a big box store like Super Walmart, helps them to move faster and more securely, then they're no longer resistant to it. As MS nurses, we can provide particular advice regarding cooling equipment, timing of exercise, and medication management so that the exercise is most beneficial. Prehabilitation would be defined as a maintenance or preventive phase of exercise or mobility training. This is encouraging a program of ongoing exercise or physical activity that promotes health, prevents deconditioning, and helps to prevent the development of secondary conditions related to a sedentary lifestyle. Many resources are available to assist patients. I encourage you to look locally at your rehabilitation facilities, local gyms or YMCAs. There are also DVDs available. MSActiveSource.com has yoga, strength training, and cardiovascular DVDs that are available free to patients. And they also have blogs and exercises of the week and things like that that you can watch online. It's very helpful. Most commonly, people with relapse and remitting MS report walking, gardening, weight training, bicycling, and calisthenics as their favorite and most used forms of exercise. So you can see it's pretty varied. The role of the MS nurse in re- and prehabilitation is one of education, advocacy, and also true nursing care and intervention. So we need to educate patients about the importance of physical activity no matter what their state of mobility is, and we need to help them define the new normal for them. And this may be a really difficult topic to broach because it may be a hit to the ego, or it may make someone actually for the first time accept their disease process. But when we help them do this, we can make it easier for them by talking to them about timing their exercise to the best time of day, or breaking up their exercise into a couple of times a day instead of one long spurt, giving them realistic expectations, but also that goals can be met, and that also goals need to be reassessed over time. We can advocate for them in the community by talking to large membership facilities such as YMCAs about potentially starting programs for patients with MS. We have a program that's co-sponsored by the YMCA and the National MS Society that provides exercise classes to patients twice a week, and we have a yoga studio in town that's going to start providing yoga classes once a week. We can really advocate for our patients by getting a care partner involved, and we can provide emotional support to them and encourage their friends and family members to do so. From a nursing care standpoint, management of issues that affect physical activity include fatigue, bowel and bladder control, skin issues with braces, and such, nutrition and medication side effects. These are huge things for people with MS. I would argue that most people in America without MS don't know how to properly hydrate or feed themselves if they're entering an exercise program. And this is what we do as nurses. We help to keep them safe and healthy while they're taking on this new goal. So what I found most interesting was how many posters there were at the consortium this year about exercise or physical activity in MS. I listed on my slide presentation several of them, and I'll just go through them briefly. Combined supervised aerobic resistance and balance exercise 3 days a week with several valid tests improved a functional ambulation score in people with MS. Greater self-efficacy was associated with fewer psychological issues and the increased ability to perform physical tasks. And a cross-sectional study to assess physical activity and cognitive function showed that average steps per day correlated with processing speed, and this was demonstrated independent of disability score on EDSS. Physical activity was also associated with less retinal nerve fiber layer loss by OCT, and physical activity linearly and inversely was associated with a number of cardiovascular comorbidities independent of disability status and other confounders. So there we go with our secondary condition prevention. So in conclusion, rehabilitation and prehabilitation are indispensable parts of MS care. Please, I encourage you to become familiar with physical activity resources in your community and work together within your community to develop those for people living with MS. And we as MS nurses are often the start point for rehabilitation and physical wellness in our patients, so I encourage you to make an activity assessment a part of each MS client visit. I've listed some great resources for you that should be easy to check out, and I thank you for your attention this evening, and I think we turn it over to questions now.
Great, Megan. Thank you. Yes, we can now open up the lines for questions. Manny, if you have any questions in queue, we can take that. I think in the moment, in the meantime, I just wanted to ask more about the role of nursing. Megan, if you could expound on what you would recommend in your own community, what are some of the things that you've done to help kind of encourage patients to get active, and have there been any programs that you've instituted in your practice?
Well, one of the things that I do, I think, most often is basically talk to patients about level of activity, what they think they're capable of, and I also frequently send people to physical therapy for not a mobility evaluation, but really for a conditioning evaluation. So not necessarily are they having a new problem, but they want to start exercising, and because of whatever their physical findings are on exam, I anticipate a problem with balance or weakness or maybe gait compensation or something, and that's helpful. I have a support group that I run from my practice, and we actually exercise together, so we do yoga together. I use the DVDs from MS Active Source, and we do those. And then within my community, we're just trying to work hard with the YMCA and the North Florida MS Society chapter to broaden the availability of those programs so that people that work can join in. Maybe there's one on the weekends. Maybe they're in different parts of town. And then we really try to get patients involved with our local MS Walk, MS Mud Run, and that's been pretty successful too.
What's the MS Mud Run?
So we have here the course. It's a 6-mile course, and it's basically an obstacle course through mud. And this was our third year in North Florida doing the Mud Run. And the second year, we raised close to $500,000. This year, we raised almost $800,000.
Oh my God.
For the MS Society. It is so much fun. And it's at a time of year when it's cool here in Florida, and it's in the morning, and the mud is actually cool. And if my husband can do it, anyone can do it. But we have had so many people living with MS do this mud run, and they do it with their families as teams, and they have a ball. You don't have to do all the the obstacles, but it's been a great fundraiser for us here in this area because it's gotten also people that wouldn't necessarily want to participate in like an MS walk or something. Lots of college kids want to do it. They raise tons of money. So
that's great.
That's pretty fun.
That's great. I wanted to go ahead and turn it over to Manny just so you can give directions if people want to ask questions.